Hello and welcome to One Inch Press Scary Podcast. Today's edition I am naming the Corona Coaster. I think so many of us have become aware of the phenomenon amongst many people where there's a sense of acceptance and maybe even a lightness about your days as you go about your new normal. And that can go on for several days in a row or maybe even weeks, and then suddenly there's kind of a crash or a dip, maybe not sudden, maybe there'll be a couple of days that are working their way down into a dip, where you're really processing some things that feel a lot more foreboding or heavy or dark or uncertain, or even scary. And that seems to be a phenomenon that people are talking about a lot lately. And today, my daughter, Ella, who's recently turned 9, said she had a special treat for me, and she strapped on this virtual reality headset, and she said, I have this treat, and it was queued up, was this very intense roller coaster, and she said, you're going to go on a roller coaster, or a video of an intense roller coaster ride, really intense roller coaster ride, one that I hope doesn't exist, because it seemed very horrible. I'm sure it does, but it seemed just too much, and I informed her that, you know, I dislike roller coasters so much that sometimes when I'm sad or I'm scared, I can say, but is this as bad as being on a roller coaster? And I can always answer, no, it's not. And I'm immediately quite a bit happier. So her idea that it being a treat, that it'd be a treat for me was somewhat false. Anyway, she laughed maniacally at my reactions as I donned the headset and experienced even a virtual reality roller coaster. I did not find it pleasant or exhilarating or fun. And I'm happy to say I'm at the age now where I don't feel any sense of peer pressure or FOMO about my choice not to go on roller coasters anymore. It's not pleasant. It's part of the sort of dysautonomia package. I have something called POTS, and I believe that I've read I'm not sure if it's related to POTS or another part of dysautonomia, that the G-force of the roller coaster feels incredibly intense for some individuals with this condition. And I know that's true for me. I always feel like my chest is being crushed and I can't breathe. And it's just the whole thing's very alarming and unpleasant, and I just don't like it. I'm happy that to say that I was able to take off the virtual reality headset before things got too intense, and I will maybe ask her for another treat. But the Corona coaster that we are all on is unfortunately not something that we can just say, yeah, this is not for me, and pull off. We are on this ride together. Globally, we are all experiencing, like I said in a previous podcast before, the last one where I had that delightful chat with Dr. Gardner. But the one before that, I talked about the fact that we are all in a storm, but not in the same boat. And I think, you know, this roller coaster is one that we're all on to some extent. And while I am very fortunate to be privileged, in a very, very privileged position right now, and I'm also aware that those circumstances could change at any time, I'm really grateful that it's, you know, I do have the privilege where there are a few days where I can sort of just be adjusted to my new normal and go about life with the coronavirus just kind of being a peripheral concern rather than an ever-present danger or threat. But I will say that the last couple of days, I've noticed that myself and a couple of friends that I spoke to, maybe actually even a handful, and then in my larger circle, in the Facebook communities that I'm a part of, I noticed this sort of collective dip in mood, or in, it seemed, even coping skills, where even the most relentlessly positive people were expressing fear, despair, just a sense of gloom, commenting that fewer people were even able to make jokes or laugh or be light, and we're really kind of taking strain of under the you know, the very many, many things that are quite sad or extremely sad about this, and also uncertain about all this. And so I just, you know, I thought about that, and I thought about how it's interesting that that seems to be a common phenomenon, that those of us who aren't, who are privileged enough not to be in peril at all times due to food insecurity or being sick or, you know, unemployment and all the accompanying issues of that right now, are still feeling days when everything seems a lot less manageable than it has been all the previous days. So I want to talk about those days and what we might be able to do to emerge from them and to climb back on the up, you know, the upswing, and maybe to flatten out. I know this, the theme of flattening the curve is one that we talk about regarding the actual virus, but maybe in terms of our emotional state, collectively, being able to flatten the roller coaster a little bit, where we are able to perhaps manage our emotions and our responses so that there aren't those very, very low dips in between the days that we are coping. So the first thing that I think we need to accept about any uncomfortable emotions is being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And a lot of times people are so uncomfortable with being uncomfortable and experiencing discomfort in their sort of emotional landscape, seeing storms in their emotional landscape, that they deny that they're happening. They go into really, really strong denial. They might respond by laughing or being inappropriate or even incredibly insensitive about the whole thing. I've seen that response from a few people that I don't know very well. I've seen it from a couple of people online where they just really dig deep into their bravado that I just know sort of casually online, where they just are like, this is the time for them to act, you know, with a ton of bravado, where it seems, you know, reading between the lines, that they might actually be really quite scared and not even accessing those emotions themselves. I've seen other people, even people I know or have considered to be friends, acting really, really insensitively. And I'm like, whoa, wow. And it's, you know, it's hard when you also are feeling very vulnerable and a friend is acting insensitively, not to take that personally, but I think it's important to recognize that these are all coping skills. I think those sort of unhealthy coping skills come about when people are just so uncomfortable with feeling uncomfortable. And I think the easiest way to get through any uncomfortable emotion or any uncomfortable psychological sort of dip is to accept it and to examine it and then to go through it and just recognize that discomfort is part of the human condition, and not every day or every experience or time in history is going to be easy or simple or light or sunny. And sometimes bad things just do happen, but at the same time recognize and really start to take stock of our resilience and remind ourselves of that resilience, and then work on being even more resilient than we were to start with. Human beings are wired for survival and are incredibly resilient, and that's something we need to keep in mind. And human beings as a species have been through countless hardships, countless extreme hardships, and have overcome and prevailed. So that's, you know, obviously the overriding theme. But on a micro level, you know, when you find yourself in a dip, I think the most important thing is not to try and run from that discomfort, to go, oh, hello, darkness, my old friend. Here you are. Well, I guess this was inevitable that you were going to have your WTF, oh my hell, what is going on? Are we all gonna die moment? And you'll freak out, and you know, you can sit with that discomfort for a moment and recognize that it is normal, that when reality is shaken and turned upside down, that sense of being shaken and turned upside down and the disquiet that comes with it is perfectly normal and perfectly related to humanity being wired for survival. And that survival, those survival instincts will create a sense of disquiet and a sense of alarm. So accepting that, and then not trying to numb it with alcohol, drugs, food, entertainment, sex, or whatever. It's one thing to have coping mechanisms, distractions that do help us to get through things or give us a little bit of joy at the end of the day or give us some release or just something to look forward to. All of those things are different. It's different to have a drink at the end of the day as a reward for a long, hard day and just a nice little chill moment while you watch a movie with your family or to, you know, eat chocolate because it tastes good and you're, you know, why not? It's, you know, it's there and you're having, you know, you are, you know, you're feeling in a little bit in need of comfort, but to just not acknowledge your emotions and then stuff them with food or numb them with alcohol or drugs or just stare mindlessly at a screen all day, scrolling without acknowledging that you are going through something and telling yourself that it's valid and examining how you are going to adapt and thrive or at least survive is very important. So the first is that acknowledgement and that ability to be uncomfortable with the discomfort. I remember when I first started to run and I was reading a lot about it, was when I was a teenager, and I read, would often read, you know, for long distance running, there would be, you know, you would have your breaks between days, but then as you were preparing for like a long race, like a half marathon or a marathon, there were several days in a row that you would have to run. And I remember reading several times that your legs need to become accustomed to running tired or even sore. Like your brain and your legs and your whole body needs to become accustomed to what it feels like to continue to run when your legs are tired. And I was, at first I thought, what a weird thing. Like, surely you can just get to the point of fitness that your legs don't become tired. And I think, well, there's probably a lot of different schools of thought for that, but I don't think there's a lot of people who complete a marathon in any kind of, you know, reasonable time before they've locked the whole thing, you know, the street sweepers come through, that don't end with their legs feeling at least somewhat tired. It's just a long, long distance, and human bodies are not really, you know, designed to do that on any one day. So there's a need for your legs and you to become accustomed to the sensation of running tired, because that tiredness will certainly set in several miles before the whole thing is over. And then it doesn't trigger that kind of alarm that stop, you've got to stop now, you're done. And you're actually able to complete the marathon on that day. So, you know, there's something to be said for emotional sort of resilience in terms of saying, well, this is uncomfortable, but I've certainly felt emotional discomfort before, and it's not going to kill me to be uncomfortable. It's not going to kill me to sit with this emotion and go, yes, this uncertainty, this change in my routine, this not knowing what's going to happen next is certainly uncomfortable. Let me examine that. Maybe let me talk about that to a trusted friend who is not going to spiral this into a whole hysteria along with me, but sort of help me to see facts and help me to stay grounded and in things that I can count on, like the love and support of my friends and my family and my own resilience. So that's number one for me. Number one is being comfortable with the uncomfortable emotion and acknowledging that it's here, because the more we try to avoid, the more avoidant we become and pretending that uncomfortable emotions aren't there or aren't existing, the more they will bother and plague us in different ways. I like to think of it, because I've had so many kids, I know of this phenomenon well, and I didn't ever learn, like it, I seem to have to relearn it with each toddler, that if I was trying to get things done while my baby or toddler was whining at me, if I was maybe, you know, doing the dishes or making dinner or trying to get something done, and I hadn't given them my divided time and attention for at least a little while, and I was trying to half-heartedly kind of attend to their needs, or pat them, you know, or talk to them here and there, but with a distracted eye, they would just, the whining would just escalate and become more and more irritating and annoying for us both. And it never failed that when I would just put aside what I was doing for 5 to 10 minutes and give that baby or toddler or even the preschooler my undivided attention and sit with them and really look at them and see them and attend to their needs, feed them, change them, play with them, talk to them, cuddle them, and then, you know, set them up with something else. When they felt seen, when they felt attended to, when they were secure that they were still my priority, my main priority, and that I loved them and had not forgotten about them, they were willing to give me the space and time to do my thing. And this just never failed. And I think the same is so true of these nagging, uncomfortable emotions. If you try to pretend that they're not there, or just go, and push them into the back and numb them with all sorts of other things rather than examining them and talking through them and making a plan for how to address them, they will just keep being problematic, and the escalation of the whining and the drama will arise in some way. Maybe it will arise in your stress levels, which will lower your immunity. Maybe they will arise in nightmares or insomnia or being really short-tempered or easily triggered or mean to family or friends or just flying off the handle over the smallest little things. These like toxic or difficult, uncomfortable emotions will be heard. They are there for a reason and they will be heard. So hear them. Give them some undivided attention. Tell them that you hear them, that you acknowledge them, that you accept them. And then, you know, decide on how you're going to address them. So one of the ways I found to address, or at least to ward off these big dips, is to, again, do things that I don't want to do. You know, when we're engaged in a project, we don't want to take time away for the whining toddler or baby or preschooler and do whatever it is that they want us to do. It's horrible. It's hard. It takes discipline. But it is honestly for the best in the long run, isn't it? And I find that I have a daily routine that I call my mental health, morning routine. And every single day I have choices to make. I have choices to make of what I'm going to do and whether I'm going to do it properly or if I'm going to try and skip it and see how things go. And it's not, you know, people like will often say to me, oh, I wish I could do that, or I wish I could meditate, or I don't really want to. I know it would be good for me, but I don't really want to. And that's the myth. I also don't really want to. To be honest, most mornings I wake up, I don't feel like doing my morning mental health routine. And that consists of meditating, doing mindful breathing, which I have chosen the Wim Hof breathing method to do, and doing some journaling. And often I will read a couple of things from some books that I find uplifting and grounding and whatever, but just putting aside some time right at the beginning of the day before I start my day, I is tried and true for me. I know that my day will be more manageable. I know that my moods will be more mellow and more stable, and I will have much better coping skills regardless of what happens that day if I start the day with that routine. And yet every single damn day I wake up and I go, oh, I just don't want to. I just want to get up and go and do some other things and I'll get to it. And that's always a catastrophe. Honestly, it's just always, it never ends well for me. So just because it's so good for me and just because I always feel good or at least a lot better after I did it, doesn't mean that it comes naturally or that it's easy. That's a myth. The same with exercising, the same with having a green smoothie, the same with anything that we discipline ourselves to do, the same with taking a cold shower, which is another thing I really, really help find is helpful for my mental health. None of these things are something that I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to do. None of these things. And I don't, you know, I think for most people that have these disciplines in their life, they aren't something that they are dying to do every day. If you are different in that way, well, that's awesome. Congratulations. I hope that I'll get to that point. Sometimes it gets that way for me for my running, but for the most part, it is a damn struggle to do any one of these things, and it's absolutely worth it. So I must say that the dips are, when they do come, and they do even come on the days where I'm feeling, when I've, you know, I've been, you know, disciplined about my routine, and I've done my morning mental health routine, that I do have some days that are just lower than others, which is, you know, just life, especially in times of corona. But they don't get completely out of control. And by the next day, I'm usually sort of on an upward trend again. So there's that, your mental health routine. Figure out what that means for you. Those methods are sort of proven methods by therapists. These things have, they've got a lot of data behind them, that things like exercise, meditation, breath work, journaling, all of these things have a lot of data to prove that they really do support good mental health. But you've got to find what works for you, and maybe doing all of those things every day right away is setting yourself up for failure. Maybe work yourself up. I talk about this every single time. Maybe choose one of those habits and try just one of them. Just try doing one of them faithfully for 21 days and note how it changes things for you. So the number one was being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Second is like unto it, is stick with your mental health routines. If you don't have one, maybe start building one, and don't think that you should only do those things when you feel like doing them. Again, being uncomfortable will set you up for lots more comfort for the rest of your day in the long term and your life. Third, you know, talking to other people, reaching out to others, finding out if, you know, your experience or just connection is so important. And right now, I think the people who are thriving or at least coping are finding ways to continue their connection or even deepen connection with loved ones in creative ways. Not everybody loves a Zoom party. I'm not a huge fan. I gotta say, I don't love it. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite format, but I do sort of consider it, again, a form of discipline to reach out outside of my family and make sure that I'm seeing people's faces every once in a while, just to kind of keep me, because I have a tendency to become pretty reclusive. I am an introvert of the highest order. And so disciplining myself to see fresh faces, to get fresh perspectives, to hear about the hardships and the triumphs of my friends and still see their faces and get that nuance of voice and expression is really important. It's very different from just seeing the spoken word, just seeing texts. In a time that we're not seeing other people and not having that nuance of human experience, that is going to contribute greatly to that sense of being all loopy and discombobulated, which I think is what a lot of people are, you know, sort of struggle with during those dips on the Corona coaster, those days where, what the hell? Oh my gosh, this is going to go on for how long? We don't know how long. What's going to happen? Also, isolation is very bad for those emotions. It really kind of strengthens those emotions of being disconnected and being disorientated and fearful. I always like to quote my favorite, which is Desiderata, a poem. And one of the lines, I believe it goes, many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. And it's so true. When you're tired or you're lonely, things seem so much more stressful and scary and dark. That's just a human thing. So that connection is imperative. And sometimes just texting is just not good enough. Calling is better, but seeing people face to face at a time that we're seeing so, unless you're sort of really on the front lines and nothing's changed for you, but when we're seeing so many fewer faces than we're accustomed to, seeing familiar faces in video is something that is not optimal for sure. And not everybody loves it. And I know it's not my fave, but it is necessary. So connection of all kinds. And then I think a really good way of heading off a sense of helplessness and despair and fear, and it's kind of foolproof, is service. And it can be tricky to do service right now when you are part of a high risk category, or or a family member of yours is high risk and you are doing all you can to mitigate that by practicing extreme social distancing. It might seem like, oh, well, what can I do? I can't leave the house. There's nothing I can do. There's always something you can do. My chosen form of service is often just reaching out in terms of, online. I try to reach out to people who I know might be struggling. I try to text people. I try to engage with people and make sure that they know that I see them and they matter to me. And I love them and they are worthy. And just because they may be alone in their homes doesn't mean that they're not being thought about. I wish I could reach out to every single person that I'm thinking about and worrying about. And to be honest, I'm thinking about, just so much global suffering sometimes that it really becomes unhealthy for me. But I'm kind of one of those empathic people who's just like, I just want to make sure that everybody feels loved and held at this time, because I can sense how hard isolation is for so many people, particularly people whose circumstances are very much less than optimal right now, where they are struggling with food insecurity, financial insecurity. They might not be in a happy home environment where things feel safe and secure. And so my form of service is just to reach out and help those people to at least feel seen and not forgotten. And that is a tremendous service. I do believe that that's a huge service, and that's one that all of us can do from wherever we are. A lot of people are figuring out how to make masks, even if they don't have sewing machines. They're making no-sew masks to distribute to people. People are doing all sorts of amazing things that you can still do from your home. People who do have a few extra bucks to spare are trying to reinvest them into their hometown, into local small businesses. They're doing all they can to support people who are struggling, and that gives them a sense of purpose and a sense of community. It's really important right now that everybody feels like they're participating in their community, and that you feel like you have a sense of purpose. A lot of people have lost their sense of purpose because their schedule might be a lot looser. And so it's just like, well, get up whenever you get up, shower whenever you shower, or don't shower at all, get dressed whenever. And that sort of, that is not, we don't typically thrive under those circumstances. Human beings definitely need a sense of purpose and a sense of value and a sense of community and the fact and a sense that they are contributing to communities, and also achieving something, even if it's something small. And so that's where my mental health routines come in. I'm just like, if I can just get through my morning mental health routine today, then I have achieved something. And so I set really small and attainable goals for myself. I've seen a lot, you know, I've talked in previous episodes about all the pushback against, okay, now's the time to write the next great American novel, or, you know, to like channel freaking Shakespeare and, you know, write a brilliant play or poem or book of poetry or volume of poetry. Or, you know, I have some really, really, really industrious over achieving friends. One guy I know has, in between being like the chief financial officer of a major banking system in South Africa, has also taken upon himself to invent a ventilator out of household items. And that's, you know, that's remarkable, but that is his coping strategy. That is, he has the capacity to do that, and it's wonderful. But nobody needs to be feeling like that, you know, that the they have any kind of pressure. I certainly don't feel any sort of pressure to match that level of performance. That's not within my capacity, and my gifts lie in other places. And I'm perfectly comfortable with serving in, you know, ways that fit the capacity that I have right now, which is not, you know, it's not as high as it is at other times, and that's just fine. Something else I saw is that, you know, if people ask you, well, what will you want to have come out of this this quarantine or this crisis as having accomplished or learned or skill you attained, and something said, you, everybody can come out saying, I've learned how to cope with a pandemic. I've learned how to manage an entirely new reality. And that's something to be proud of. If we can all come out of this having, you know, alive and having our wits about us, more or less, and having some, you know, even though, you know, there will be hard days and maybe even some significant breakdowns and fetal days where you need to just hunker down with some chocolate and Netflix or whatever. But if you come out of this with, you know, just knowing that you came out of this, that's enough. That's great. That's wonderful. So, you know, remember that your capacity does not have to be exceeded. But something that will help anybody, I am completely convinced, is having some sense of purpose, achieving some goal that you've set, and it should and must be a manageable one. This is not the time to set yourself up for extremes or to, you know, challenge yourself and set yourself up for failure. There's a lot going on that our brains are processing and our bodies are processing, and that takes a ton of energy, whether or not you're cognizant of it or not. That's just a fact. But having measurable goals that you can check off in your mind at the end of the day, even if the day doesn't sort of knock your socks off with its productivity, you can say, well, at least I meditated, or I wrote 3 lines in a journal, or I did drink my water today, yay me, or hey, took that shower today. I was super proud of myself, seriously, like inordinately proud of myself, that I did my whole morning routine, and I exercised in the morning, and I had a shower before noon. Not only that, I actually like styled my hair and did all the makeup, all of it, all the makeup that I would have done in the past. I felt like so proud. And I came out and listened to my husband. Do I look pretty? Because I did my hair and my makeup, and I was just like glowing. I felt like, you know, I was like congratulating myself as if I was a child who had dressed herself for the first time, because I have been showering almost every day, because I exercise almost every day and it's sort of a necessity. But to do the whole shebang, like put on jewelry, put on makeup, and do my hair, just felt like this enormous accomplishment. And, you know, I'm dressed in like sweats and a sweatshirt, but they're new, and I felt completely cool. I was just so proud. So I'm really not advocating doing like things that are, incredibly hard, or a friend of mine made me laugh so much today because she knows me quite well, and she had given me a start for her sourdough bread, and she's somebody with a much greater capacity than I have in just about every area, and I love her for it, but I don't believe I will ever have the energy to match her capacity. But amidst all the other things she's doing, she's making sourdough bread, and she gave me a start for it because I expressed some interest until I realized how much work sourdough bread really was. And she showed me her latest sourdough bread, and I oohed and aahed, and she said, "Are you feeding your start?" And to be honest, I don't know what the hell that means. I have no idea what it means to feed your start. I have an idea it's got something to do with yeast. I don't know. And I just sort of, I sent back a gif of a cat shaking its head, just numbly, like, "Nope, I sure am not." And she's like, "This might be something, this might not be for you unless you have somebody in your family who's really looking for a challenge right now." And I just laughed. I was like, "Well, let me tell you that I gave myself a literal three chairs and took a photo of myself in the mirror, standing here in my little sweatshirt and sort of sweatpants, and with my hair done and my makeup on, like as if I just completed a marathon." So that's where we're at right now. That's the level of accomplishment I'm working with right now. So you might be right. I think that I'm probably not going to become America's next great sourdough baker. But thank you anyway. And she accepts me and loves me for who I am. But you know, that's we've just got to accept our capacity, do what we can do, make those goals achievable. But have a sense of purpose. Have a sense of purpose. Do something for someone. Feed a plant. Feed an animal. Fill up a bird feeder. Do something in your day that gives you a sense of purpose. It gives you a sense of contributing. We can all contribute. Every single person, every being alive can contribute in some way, even if it's just a smile or a kind thought or a loving thought. That is huge. Or a prayer. Or a, gosh, there's just so many beautiful ways in which we can contribute positively to the world right now, to the universe right now. And I really, really do encourage you to sort of take a moment every day and think about how you can contribute positively to the world at large, just in terms of a positive thought, a positive wish, a positive word, a smile, or small or great acts of service. Those go so far right now, and those go such a long way. And then lastly, I was interrupted, so I'm hoping I'm not going to repeat myself because I restarted this podcast and I'm not sure if I already talked about this. But at night, when I do get sort of, it just so happens that, you know, I'll always see the most alarming thing way close to bedtime, which is why I really need to get off social media like at least 2 hours before I plan to go to bed. But I've noticed that, you know, when my anxiety starts to peak, and I was having really bad dreams and I was sleeping really badly, it was because I'd been reading some sketchy stuff or like really scary things online. And of course, media does sort of tend to trend towards making things quite a bit more scary than maybe they need to be. And so I've started this new exercise of every night when I lie in bed, just thinking about the things that happened that day that have gone well or that I'm particularly grateful for, and just really focusing on them and just letting my whole body feel so much gratitude for those things. And then saying to the universe, and or whatever your higher power is, and if you don't have a higher power, just really being immersed in gratitude for those experiences or those things that you have. And I think all of us can think of something. If you're listening to this podcast, I know you have some reason to be happy or to be grateful. The fact that you have a phone or listening device, that you're in contact with the world, or that you have Wi-Fi, or that you have the means of communication. Anybody with a phone or is able to listen to a podcast is streets ahead of the rest of the, you know, streets ahead of the majority of the world right now. So, you know, let's consider that, just gratitude for that. And, but most of us have even more wonderful reasons to be grateful. And I just let my whole body feel so much gratitude. I replay all those things and I just sort of bathe in the love and the light that I experienced in those wonderful blessings. And then I say to the universe, thank you so much. I love those gifts. I love those gifts you've given to me. Please send me more of that. I just love them so much. And then I imagine the universe as just this ocean that has no end, that is endless and bottomless and will never dry out of good, wonderful gifts. And that it is just like a doting parent who just loves me so, so much. And you know, when you have somebody that you love so much and you give them the perfect gift and they cherish it and they're delighted, just imagine the cutest kid ever. And that's your kid, for instance, even if you don't have kids, just imagine the cutest kid and you have found the perfect gift and they are just over the top delighted with it. And they just pour their whole souls into cherishing that gift and loving it and playing with it and treating it so well. Aren't you going to be so excited for the next time and the next opportunity you have to give them a gift? Aren't you just going to look for reasons to give them another gift because it's such a wonderful, thrilling give and take? It's such a wonderful experience for somebody who appreciates the gift to receive it and to cherish it and love it and delight in it. I think so. So I picture the universe as just this wonderful, loving parent of sorts who just can't wait to give me more of what I love and cherish and delight in. And I just make sure to say, I just love the things that you've given me. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to receive more of them. And then I just go to sleep with just this peace, the sense of being held and seen and loved, and a sense of confidence that I will receive more wonderful good things in the future, and that none of us know the future. And though it's very uncertain and very scary in some ways, it could also be wonderful and magnificent, and we could discover so many ways to make our world better for so many more people throughout this difficult experience. And yes, there's an enormous amount of tragedy, and I don't know for sure that that tragedy won't touch me personally, but I do have hope. I have to have hope that the universe knows me and sees me and loves me, and that the gifts and the beautiful things and the love I experience now are things that are eternal in nature. I love my family. I love my friends. I am so grateful for the love that I experience and the love that I am able to give, and I feel very confident that so long as I cherish those things and recognize them as the wonderful gifts that they are, that they, I will always be surrounded with love. I will always manage to access that. So that is a wonderful way for me to go to sleep. And I will leave that thought with you at the end of this podcast. So if you're in a dip in your Corona coaster right now, please know that you are far from alone. Please reach out to someone if you need to reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk. And, you know, maybe take on some of the tips that I've given you. Don't deny difficult feelings. Don't flee from them. Being comfortable with being uncomfortable is the only way for us to grow and get through hard times. Set up some good little routines for yourself. Don't try to exceed your capacity, but do ask a few easy and achievable things of yourself each day and maybe build upon that. Do serve, strive for connection every day, and do reach out. And then, you know, when things get really scary, maybe try that visualization or something else that works for you. I posted that visualization on Facebook today, and one of my friends said that these guided visualizations do nothing for me. That, and she described to me what that one came out for her, and it was funny. And I was like, please do not get literal with any more of my visualizations because you're going to ruin them for me. But, you know, not every sort of way of looking at things works for everybody. But I do believe that we can all find comforting thoughts to rest in before we go to sleep every night that will give us a break from the turmoil and give us a break from the stress. So work on that maybe during the daylight hours, something to reach for when things get a little bit harder later at night. With that, I shall bid you adieu. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're staying safe. Social distancing, you guys, I'm a fan, and I do believe that the better we do it right now, the better off we're all going to be and the more quickly we're going to get through this thing. So I really hope that you're taking it seriously. That is my plug for social distancing. Listen to experts, listen to scientists, don't listen to fear mongers. Try to keep your eye on just a few really good trusted sources. And you know, there's a lot of people out there with a lot of love to give and a lot of reassurance to give. Seek those people out. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay safe, and I will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.